Welcome to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with host Lane Nordlund.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cattleman's Call podcast. I'm Lane Nordlund, and thanks for joining us here today. Our conversation is brought to you by our friends at Beefmaster. Well, today finds us in San Diego, California, as we get ready for the cattle industry summer business meeting. And for us, haying season is wrapped up at the home place in Montana. I know folks are having a pretty good hay crop out across the countryside, and we're always talking about weather, hay, and, of course, cattle prices when we're at meetings like we're at here this week. We are finding ourselves in San Diego at the Cattle Industry Summer Business Meeting. It's a lot cooler down here in San Diego than it is back home, and that might be the same for our three guests joining us here today. We are joined today by NCBA President Todd Wilkinson of South Dakota, President-elect Mark Eisley of Wyoming, and Vice President Buck Werbein there from the great state of Nebraska. And I guess, gentlemen, how are things going here in the beautiful, sunny San Diego today?
Well, Lane, I have to tell you, arriving in San Diego, it was certainly an eye-opening experience. My first person I basically walked by was a guy dressed in a Wookiee costume. So I realized I had arrived in a different part. Let's just put it, this isn't South Dakota, Dorothy. So the event is going great. We're huge attendance, which is really good. You know, the producers are upbeat, and the products that we're offering to everybody for materials for educational things are top-notch. So looking forward to a couple really good days here.
Now, I should preference for our audience, there was a Comic-Con going on at the start of our meeting. I came in on the tail end of it. I did not get to see any Wookiees or Spider-Man or anything like that, but I did think Mark Eisley was dressed up as Thor the other day, though. Is that your favorite superhero?
Yeah, it's
superhero?
A giveaway of my inner personality. No, I've experienced Comic-Con before. They actually descended on Cheyenne, Wyoming years ago, and I couldn't believe it when I saw it, but it was good to get into California, the beautiful ag state. You know, it's got a lot of issues, but that's what we're here to discuss, the issues.
Well, again, we're down here working on the issues. And Buck, for yourself over in Nebraska, how are things going over your way?
It's been a pretty good year so far. We were dry early, looked like the corn crop was going to be like last year. Suddenly, in July, it starts raining. So May is normally our most rain month, and this year it was the driest ever. But we've made up for it in July, so during pollination and the ear setting and filling out the ears, it's kind of ideal right now. So the corn crop looks really good, and obviously the cattle market helps everyone.
No, definitely. And I guess, what's your reaction to USDA saying this could be one of the largest corn crops in history? That wasn't the thought a few months ago, as you mentioned.
I can guarantee you our dry land corners, because we're irrigated, looked horrible, just like last year. And now they're a foot and a half shorter than the rest of the field, but they look healthy and good ears and so forth. So the USDA surprises me all the time, so this isn't a surprise that I'm surprised, but we'll see. I mean, as a cattle feeder, I hope they're right. You know, the corn farmers, maybe not so much.
Yep. And Mark, for yourself, Cheyenne Frontier Day is currently underway. Just got started there, not too far from your home place. But how are things been this through spring and summertime?
You know, we were in fear of a big drought. We were on the tail end of coming on to 3 years. I prayed for rain, and by golly, sometimes you can be careful what you pray for. We got a lot of it. Timing was great. We got great grass. We got great hay. Having a tough time getting it put up, but that's a good problem to have. So. But we took cows up to the National Forest. They're doing well. And by and large, I've got very few complaints other than there's just not enough hours in the day.
And Todd, for yourself, I know it is like a Garden of Eden moisture-wise in your neck. He's giving me a look. I've got to talk with Todd a few times here this summer. The drought kind of continues in your country.
It does. I listened to your opening comments about everybody having a wonderful hay crop, and we just finished our doing some hay, and we got 30% of normal. So our hay crop is short. Our winter wheat got zeroed out. But I will have to follow up on Buck's comments, because I didn't know if we were going to have corn crop. I normally would have contracted for a couple thousand head of cattle by this point for fall delivery. I haven't contracted for anything. So for all those cattle buyers out there that I normally deal with that are listening to this, yes, I'm probably going to come to buy, but you better ratchet back your prices a little bit. But no, in reality, I think I'm going to get some corn now, so that's helpful. After the week that I've been gone here, I think we're in the upper 90s in South Dakota, so they're telling me I'm going to come back to a little bit of a scorched earth thing. But, hey, knowing that there was some corn going to be there for forage, that's a lot better than we looked a month and a half ago. Yep.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words from our friends at Beefmaster.
The Beefmaster excels in all maternal traits. They get bred easily year in and year out. They make raising good calves look easy and possess excellent longevity, not breaking down in tough environments. Research shows the breed ranks above others for feed efficiency, one of the most important production traits. If your cow herd has lost its ability to adapt, maybe it's time to rebuild with proven Beefmaster females. Nothing beats a Beefmaster. Learn more about what the Beefmaster cow can do at beefmasters.org.
Well, again, it's we've interviewed Matt Makins this week, so I'll look forward to that conversation here in just a little bit on what that weather forecast looks like. But that's what we are dependent on here in the livestock and farming and ranching, and it's just the business we're in, and we take it as it comes. And, you know, we also have a lot of issues and initiatives that come up that impact cattlemen and women, you know, each and every day. So, you know, we're down here at the summer meeting. I guess, what is the purpose of this summer business meeting, and what are some of those initiatives and issues that are currently being presented for the members of NCBA to address? Todd?
Yeah, so Lane, this is the business end of NCBA. This is where the producers come and formulate the policies and the directions of the organization. So this is a pretty critical 3 or 4 days in here. When that producer goes to their local cattlemen's association and believes that there needs to be a national focus on an issue, they can literally show up at this meeting through their local association and can have a voice. And oftentimes it's that initiative that comes from out on the ranch or out on the farm that then becomes policy for this organization. So some of the issues that we're hitting on, your listeners in particular will recognize the BLM. Obviously that is a major topic all across the country as I travel. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the Farm Bill and the implications as to the Farm Bill, the funding that we are going to hopefully secure for the foot and mouth vaccine bank and the disaster preparedness. And then the other key shift, if there was a shift for this meeting, is the cell-based goop that they're trying to make now. And, you know, when I had a debate, if you can call it a debate, on Good Morning America with a cardiologist who is the head of a company making this cell-based product. You know, I'm not going to give it the credibility of even terming it meat, because anything that's grown in a biorefractor, which looks for your listeners like a big beer vat, And they want to feed that to America's public, I'm not going to give it the credibility to associate it even with the term fake meat. But that is a major focus for the producers out here, and we have to zero in on getting that labeled. Because when that consumer goes up to that meat counter, we all need it clearly differentiated so it isn't a package of ground beef unless it's truly a package of ground beef. And that is a focus here. And I'd love it to say a package of goop, but I don't think I'm going to get my way. But we're going to fight on that definition.
And Mark, for yourself, I guess, what's it mean coming down here and just talking with fellow producers and working on these key issues?
You know, a lot of the things that Todd touched on and nuances within each of those categories, the Farm Bill is absolutely huge. There's all kinds of things in there we've got to watch for, make sure that funding stays in place. A lot of people don't realize that 80% of that farm bill doesn't go to agriculture. It goes to nutrition programs and things like that. And so to label that as a giveaway to the ag community is a huge mistake. It's not there at all. The BLM issue, that has far-reaching effects. Government overreach in every way possible.
And that's the proposed BLM conservation rule, just to be exact with our listeners.
Absolutely, yeah. That has implications not just for grazing, but it has implications for recreation, timber mining, any kind of multi-use, and we're afraid that may trickle over to other agencies. So, yeah, that's a huge concern for us. And, of course, the other one I think is waters of the U.S. We got this great ruling from the Supreme Court, and the administration just decides to just carry on and not rescind any of their rules. It's just, it's kind of ludicrous that's how they operate. They'd rather ask for forgiveness than, ask for permission.
You got more optimism, Mark, thinking they're going to ask for forgiveness for anything. I think they just bowl ahead no matter what happens.
That's absolutely true, and that's how they did that BLM rule. They just said we cooked this up in the back room, and they were proud of it, and I was taken back by it. So you're probably spot on.
And Buck, I guess when you're out and about, what's it been like? I guess maybe let's just transition to that. Obviously, these are really key issues that producers are concerned with, and CBA is working to have policy and advocate for on producers' behalf. But all three of you have been out on the summer meeting circuit, or there are summer meetings or annual meetings that take place this time of the year. But I guess what's that been like, really just having that personal one-on-one with producers that are concerned about what's going on or have questions about the direction NCBA takes these policy and advocacy? I guess what's that been like on a personal level, just helping explain these issues with producers?
Yeah, it's interesting at the national level when you visit other states and so forth, what you've really got is everybody's got their own local issues that they're dealing with. All of us do, and we deal with them in our local affiliates and state affiliates. But then they're also tied into the national things like WOTUS and GIPSA and whatnot. You got the BLM rule in the western half of the states, and the eastern half of the states don't know much about it. And so that's kind of fascinating. It's important to everyone. So it's gratifying to know that those things are being dealt with on every level. And so I would say that, and just to expand a little bit on what Todd said, this is where the really heavy lifting of the work gets done. There's a lot of work done at convention, but a lot of fun too. And it's not a lot of fun here, it's a lot of work. And it truly, if I could impart something to folks in talking, it's that we truly are a grassroots organization. We have no policy that the members did not set. And as officers, we would all heartily agree that we don't do anything that isn't in the policy book. And so it's really important to be here and be heard. And so there are some things that never end. I mean, I swear WOTUS is never going to go away, and GIPSA and things like that. You know, blah, 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 the list goes on. But we fight against those things, and then the new things, you know, we've got the fake goop. And so that's new, although fake meat is not. You know, plant-based protein has been around for 30 years or something. So, you know, we just keep working at it, and some of it's whack-a-mole and some of it's being aggressive and attacking rather than defending.
And Todd, for yourself, what are some of the takeaways? I know you visited Wyoming for their annual meeting, and I know, saw you in Montana as well. But what are some of those takeaways, just being able to engage with these producers that have questions or concerns?
You know, I think the biggest concern for the producer out there, really no matter whether it's in Florida, Montana, or Oregon. I've kind of spanned all over the place, and one common theme runs throughout. You know, farmers and ranchers are real stewards of the ground, and they understand that. They do what they need to do to make their livelihood, but what's most frustrating to them is the regulatory overreach. And it can come in many forms. It could come from a BLM issue. It can come from a WOTUS issue. It can come from an issue that's more particularly oriented to their area. But whether it's state or whether it's federal, the government seems inherent and intent on meddling with farm production and ranch production. And, you know, that's really frustrating, because when you have an operation that's sustainable, and I'm defining that as multi-generational and successful and really good with the ground and with the livestock, and then you have a government bureaucrat that thinks they know better, and they're going to tell you how to do this and that, and yet they don't know the backside from the front side of a heifer, it's frustrating. So you listen to those issues, and then you develop a strategy, and you know that strategy can be oriented towards a cow-calf producer, or it may be oriented to a feedlot operation. But you know, together and united, I have never been involved in an organization, and I've been involved in a lot of different ones over my career, that can have the impact that NCBA has. You know, it's great to carry a big stick, and I like to hit people with it every once in a while, and NCBA lets me do that.
Mark, for yourself, busy time out on the road as well.
You know, and I'd like to build on something that Todd spoke about is, you know, a lot of times they'll ask us to come in and speak, talk about what the issues are, maybe what NCBA is doing and how we're doing it. But a lot of times I find it more important to just listen, just sit and listen to what they're saying, see what their issues are, see if they're involved in a larger chain of activity, starting at local, but maybe ending up at the state and unfortunately in a national situation. So I think key is to listen to a lot of these guys and see what's going on. And one of the things that involves all of us is transportation and the cost of our inputs and that sort of thing, no matter what part of the country you're in. So you have to think about those things, whether we can work around to some degree, but the government overreach and overregulation is largely on the front of our minds all the time anymore.
Now, Todd, just a few short months ago, we were down in New Orleans, and we did a podcast conversation just on kind of what you're looking forward to in your year as president, and it's amazing how fast a year goes. You know, in the first half of that, I guess, what were some of the – I know we've talked a lot about the policy and issues and advocacy that NCBA has been focused on and how some of the issues you've helped lead, of course. But I guess, what were some of those things that you focused on in your year of service, that first half, that have really come true and helped strengthen the organization for those family farmers and ranchers in the countryside?
You know, Lane, I have been most focused on delivering the message that, you know, this organization can make a difference, and if there's an issue, we need to be aware of it and go hit that issue head on, and not to back away, not to take a back seat to anybody. And you know, the one issue that has really surprised me from the when we talked at convention is the way that the animal activists have got involved in the farm bill. I don't know that we've ever seen this to this degree in history. You know, when you got PETA and HSUS and ASPCA trying to dictate farm bill, because for one thing, that the checkoff has been so successful in what it does, they've decided that they're going to attack the checkoff because they don't want people increasing that beef demand. And so for the people that are listening to this, you know, that's a great accolade as to how successful the checkoff is when they want to defund your product, your delivery, because it has had such success. And that's a testament out there to the Federation and the beef councils all across America, because you are making a difference. You know, they say, how is it, flattery is the best, I don't remember, can't think of this saying, but you know, tip it on its head, and if they're attacking you because you're successful, you're doing something right. So as you go across out there, you get to hear the stories. That's probably been the biggest thing for me, I'm on a lot of farms and ranches and talking to the producer and hearing their positives. And by and large, Lane, this is, I'm in a wonderful year as president with rising cattle prices. There's a lot of positivity out there. And if we can build on that and learn from our neighbors and our friends and what they are doing that's successful, and then take that message all across the country, it is a joy for me to, nearly every week I'm on the road somewhere, and to go in and talk to producers, whether it's at a meeting, or whether it's sitting at their kitchen table, or whether it's a coffee shop, and hear what their local county organization is doing, what their state affiliate is doing, and then I can help deliver what the message as to what NCBA is doing. And I just want to thank those people that I've got to meet this year. I will tell you, my foot will be at the throttle all the way through to the end of this thing. I am going to leave nothing on the field, and I hope I get to see you all down the road.
Well, again, thanks for that work, Todd, and for sharing that insight. And Mark, for yourself, I guess where do you see the opportunities for cattle producers going this year and next here in the short term?
Well, despite the pessimism over how some things have gone in the past, I think there's some amazing opportunities for young people. We've got to be creative. We've got to move forward. We've got to allow them to dodge some of the regulation or the tax codes to let them do that. I think we generally find with ag producers, if you just turn them loose, they can pretty much deliver whatever it is that they need, the country needs, people need. I think that's important. So, you know, one more thing I'd like to add to that is that the NCBA staff is second to none. I'd put them up against anybody. They're well-versed, they're intelligent, they just do everything well for us, no matter what they are. They're our go-between when we need information. And I think one of the things that most people don't realize is that a lot of our staff are farm and ranch-based people. They're invested. Mom and dad, their grandpa's place, uncle, they grew up on it, whatever, or they're planning to go back to it. So they're invested in our mission, and that's very reassuring. So I think there's opportunities, but you got to look for them. And I think working with academia in some of those regards, we're finding some of those.
Now, Mark, also, just like so many ranchers across the western United States, you utilize federal lands and state lands for grazing, but focusing on that federal lands aspect of things, you know, they are vital to livestock production in the United States, and it's been such an interesting discussion on my social media pages about the BLM's conservation rule, because there's some people that do see it as an overreach by the federal government, and truly they're pushing something through without any public stakeholder input. But then there's always those statements that all these ranchers, they just already just get this land for free, they take advantage of it, and you know the narrative, the inaccurate narrative that sometimes people want to include when it comes to seeing cattle and sheep on federal lands. But what is your message as president-elect about the importance of cattle and sheep grazing on our federal lands and the role of conservation and why it's important to tell that story?
Well, I think it's important for several reasons. First of all, about 40% of all livestock produced eventually goes into or goes through some kind of public lands arrangement. That's vital for the economies, especially local economies, no matter what they are. You support those economies with that production and those businesses. I also believe that You can't get after the ranchers and the farmers because we're stewards and we treat those public lands just as well or better than our own. The federal government has some guidelines that we adhere to, so it's not a free-for-all. There's no good old boy system. We earn that. But you don't steward a property or land through things for multi-generations by abusing it. It never has worked and it never will. So things that are multi-generational and continue to move forward, that's a good indication of sustainability, and it's a good indication of how you take care of your environment.
Lane, I just got to jump in there. You know, you bring up the BLM, and that's a hot button for me. I will just tell you. And, you know, for those of you that are listening to this, the fact that we have a BLM administrator that in her younger days was driving tree spikes into trees in protest. You know, that's indicative of the direction that office has went from a national level. Yet when I go into these various states in the West and I talk to their people on the ground, so the state director in a particular state, they're frustrated because they didn't have the ability to put any input into this proposed rule, and they're getting blindsided. Sure, they can't talk about it a whole lot, but you know, our producers have learned to deal with their local folks, and yet now we have an edict coming from on high that doesn't make any sense. And I challenge your listeners out there to really be an advocate and really stand up to this BLM power grab, because clearly what this is designed to do is take the grazing away from, and I don't care what they say, if you're going to elevate it to the same level as grazing, you're trying to take away something from the producer that is authorized by statute, and yet here we have conservation leases being touted as that somehow was statutorily authorized. That's just a bunch of bunk, and we need to tell people that, and we need to let this administrator know that she can't just come up with rules out of thin air and try and shove it down America's throat.
In that comment period wrapped up on July 5th, and lots of comments were submitted. They did a big extension on that comment period by 15 days. But again, a lot of voices of opposition coming from NCBA and partners like the Public Lands Council, American Sheep Industry Association, Farm Bureau, all in that proposed conservation rule. And hopefully we have a positive remarks about that down the road from those public comments in terms of what the BLM may or may not do with that rule. But before we continue our conversation, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear from our friends at Beefmaster.
The Beefmaster excels in all maternal traits. They get bred easily year in and year out. They make raising good calves look easy and possess excellent longevity, not breaking down in tough environments. Research shows the breed ranks above others for feed efficiency, one of the most important production traits. If your cow herd has lost its ability to adapt, maybe it's time to rebuild with proven Beefmaster females. Nothing beats a Beefmaster. Learn more about what the Beefmaster cow can do at beefmasters.org.
Returning back to our conversation here in San Diego, as we move along, you know, Buck, we're talking about a lot of issues right now that are detrimental to the industry. But I guess for yourself, what are some wins that you've seen for cattle producers over the past year?
We had a big win with the Sackett case before the Supreme Court that ruled in our favor on WOTUS, and that will bode well, we believe, going forward as they try and tweak that rule and resubmit it and so forth. And what's clear, as Todd mentioned, this administration is not going to back off on these things. They're just going to double down. And so that was a big win, but it just caused another fight. But we moved the scrimmage line a long way, and Mary Thomas Hart in our Washington office had a lot to do with that. And so people can be proud of our staff and the hard work that's done. And, of course, people writing and calling their congresspeople is really important. You can't overstate that. You know, I hope people realize, don't ever think that that isn't worthwhile. So some wins like that, and then continued challenges. One thing about these, I was thinking the other day, I've been through maybe four or even five iterations of these cattle market wrecks, and they're all the same. Somebody's blaming somebody else and wants it fixed, whether it's the government or NCBA or state affiliate, and then we come out of them and things get better and emotions tone down a little bit, and so here we are in a good time. The problem is, to get to that good time, you had to cut the herd back. So we have, through the checkoff, built demand for our product all around the world. and through good breeding and good practices and so forth. And so we need to be able to have a large herd and still keep the prices up. And so we've got a couple packing houses maybe going to get built that could contribute to that. There's a lot going on that could redound to our benefit down the road. So a lot, I would say there's a lot more positives. It's just that the negatives slap you upside the head and you have to deal with them.
And, you know, that's one thing. We talked about how busy these few days are here at the summer business meeting, but we have the committee meetings going on, and this is where the producers from all the different states come together and they bring these issues. They bring their policy, they make their amendments, and I guess maybe that's why, you know, you look at the WOTUS SAC v EPA case, NCBA had policy on the books to advocate against the current WOTUS rule and definitions for several years. How important is it, though, when we come to these meetings? Again, we can complain about it all we want at the kitchen table, down at the stockyards or the cafe, but how vital is it, though, for that policy creation to take place during these committee meetings?
It's what drives everything. The staff does nothing that's not in the policy book. The officers, the same way. And so it is not, I can tell you, it is not enjoyable work. It's tedious and difficult, but it's incredibly important because it drives the direction of this really potent association, NCBA, in a great, the cattle business is just the greatest business. So it's absolutely crucial that this kind of work happens.
Lane, I just got to follow up on that and a couple of comments that Buck made there. You know, first of all, in your comment, because we had that policy, we were in court. We fought in court. You know, a lot of organizations out there claim to be representing cattle producers, but they're not in the trenches fighting day in and day out, and they're not in the courtroom trying to protect the producers' rights. And, you know, the other thing is, I got to just say this like it is. You know, we hear all this crap, and I'm going to call it that, about we need this or that government mandate for this or that. But let's look at the cattle markets. Let's look at reality. The market has cycled back up, and it's not because we had some government edict that said we had to market our cattle a certain way. And I know that's going to it's going to offend some people, but let's face it, folks. If all we have to do is to fix the markets is to get the government to meddle in it, you're gonna find that that's not reality. And the proof is in the pudding right now today, where we got record prices for the calves that I'm going to be buying and the calves I'm going to be selling. And it isn't because somebody passed a bill someplace that said how we had to market the cattle.
Well, again, it all really takes shape right here at these meetings and past meetings, and, you know, policy gets created, gets revised, and sometimes it gets taken out of the book because everything's been accomplished. And I think there's nothing better when you can see those policies get accomplished out in Washington, D.C. But, you know, I guess as we wrap this up, you know, we have some good times right now. We have a small U.S. cattle herd, obviously. I guess what is your advice for those young producers out there that maybe, you know, maybe they're thinking of coming back, you know, maybe starting off on their own, or, you know, they both, you know, both spouses have jobs in town, but they still want to run cattle. Maybe I'm talking about myself. What advice do you have for them? And just the importance of, you know, maybe some tips about management, some cattle herd tips, or just the importance of just seeking advice and joining associations.
I'll jump in on that. The first thing I'd say is don't assume that you have to get too big too fast. The livestock industry, if you can lease some ground and you can get build your herd over time, it gives you the ability to work your way into there. And I hear that and I see that as I go across the country. There's a lot of young producers. They're just, whether it's with mom and dad or whether it's totally on their own. And the entrepreneurial spirit out there with young cattle producers is impressive. And working their way in slowly, that can help you go through the peaks and the valleys, because sometimes when we saddle up to too much debt, and we get too invested too quickly, if the market turns on you, it can be pretty ugly. So I'll pitch this over to Mark and Buck, but I don't be in a rush. Take your time. Farmers and ranchers have been built generationally, and don't think you have to be as big as a neighbor in 5 years.
You know, I think a couple of things that worked for me was, one, I joined my local association, the state association, and a national organization like NCBA. I networked. I didn't have to invent the wheel, but I had to learn how to use it right. And that kind of institutional knowledge is where you gain that. And people are open and willing to help share that with you if you give them an opportunity. The other is probably find, along the same lines that Todd was talking about, find a niche market. Find something that works for you, maybe no one had thought of. You know, technology is a huge aid these days. Anything from selling seed stock to custom haying or farming operations, maybe create a niche market for you that gives you leverage into the cattle business. There's all kinds of opportunities out there, and you got to talk to other folks who've been in that cycle. So I think that's where I would start. Simple but good.
I would say that the cattle business lends itself to being able to have a couple of jobs in town or whatever, and then still be able to begin a small operation. You know, cows don't require your presence every moment of every day, and so you can get going. There's a large capital requirement, and that's a roadblock, but with enough want to and the entrepreneurial spirit, you can do it. So I would say, you know, keep yourself, be informed and be involved and stay on top of current events and so forth and opportunities. And that's mental energy, but that's important. And I see the young people of today having a lot of mental energy. They got a lot more than I have.
And, you know, we got Cattle Convention 2024. That's going to be coming up there in beautiful Orlando, Florida, there last part of January, first part of February, is that right? I don't have the dates right in front of me here right now, but
you're in the ballpark.
But you know, a lot of people will say, gosh darn, that's a long ways away, you know, travel isn't cheap, hotels aren't cheap, but you know, what are your words of encouragement to say, you know what, this might be a good opportunity to take the family on that yearly vacation, but you know what, it's not just going and walking around a trade show. There's so much more at that convention between the cattlemen's colleges. You talk about the trade show, but there's so much innovation on that trade show floor, but also just the policy creation as well. I guess, what are your words of encouragement, not just to young producers, but producers of all ages, you know, because we all recognize it's an investment to go to these meetings. It's an investment away from the operation, but it's also an investment back into your operation if you take that opportunity as well.
Yeah, Lane, I'm going to be a poster child this year because I trooped all my grandkids and my kids and their spouses. So I hauled 17 of them to New Orleans, burned up every frequent flyer mile I had, and they had a wonderful time. So this year, Grandpa is taking everybody to Orlando. We're going to spend a few days on the front end at Disney World, going to make a little bit of a vacation in on the deal. And you know, when you haul a bunch of grandkids around and they're various ages, I was a little concerned, is this going to be something that they would like? You know, clearly Disney World's and the exception, but they'd absolutely had a blast in New Orleans, and it wasn't all just cattle functions. There's a lot to do at a convention for a family. And if you take the time and you can get away, that was my son's first, and he's into our operation. In fact, he basically runs it while his dad's goofing around with NCBA. But he took the time and got to Cattlemen's College and was thoroughly impressed. He came away with some new insights, some new things he brought back to our operation. And that's what really happens at convention. The other thing that happens at convention, bar none, there is not a better place to network. You will meet people from across the country that you can gain insight and share your insight with, and just have a wonderful time doing it, because let's face it, there's not a bunch of Wookiees walking around at our conventions, and we don't have to worry about Thor throwing his hammer at us or whatever. This is just good producers, people that love the industry, and they want to welcome you with open arms.
Mark?
You know, I remember the first time I took one of my family members to convention, and the look on their face is something I'll never forget. The trade show was such an eye-opener for them. And on top of that, I've come home with lots of ideas and new technologies that have helped us. They continue to do the same. It's absolutely an investment in our time.
Buck?
It's expensive. We know that. And we rack our brains on what we can do to tone that down. To go to a place that can handle the size of our convention, it simply limits you where you can go. One of the things I like is the places we go usually are good vacation spots. So you can take your family and use it partly as a work event and partly as a vacation. And so I think that's effective. And, of course, I just echo what the other guys are talking about with the networking and the knowledge. The technology is moving fast in our business, too. And so you get to see that. And it's impressive and see how the process works and so forth.
Well, again, I want to thank you three for joining us here today. It's early when we recorded this conversation because these three officers have a big day ahead of them. Again, we want to thank Todd Wilkinson, Mark Isley, and Buck Werbein for joining us here this morning. And we look forward to you joining us there, whether it's down in Orlando or here on the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Cattleman's Call podcast. And thank you to Beefmaster for bringing you this conversation today. Again, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. I'm Lane Nordlund. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with Lane Nordlund. For more information, visit ncba.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.